Hi, I'm Philip Hong. Welcome to another edition of The Best of Humble and Fred. Happy Thanksgiving, by the way. This is The Best of Humble and Fred on air and online. We're going to start with a string of comedians. Here's the great Darren Frost.
Please welcome to our program a young fellow who has been making people laugh and horrifying them.
Yes, at the same time.
At the same time. For years now, he's been part of this country's comedy lineup. Wherever sacred cows need to be fixed.
Yeah, it's good.
How do you like that?
Yeah, it's good. Milk everywhere.
Exactly. If you're in the mood for some real talk, thanks to, you know, like Mike Boone, real talk, real comedy, you better get to Yuck Yucks in Toronto this weekend. See this young man. See him before he moves to Barrie, Darren Frost.
Woo! Hey.
When you first announced you were moving to Barrie,
yes,
I sent you a note.
Yes,
congratulating you.
Yes,
I said, "Great job! Get the hell out of this town."
That's right.
No one needs you here.
It's time. That's right.
No one needs you here anymore.
No anymore.
Toronto's a big city in Canada. You've lived here most of your life. Aren't you originally from, like, Sudbury or something?
I'm originally from Brantford, Ontario, the home of Wayne Gretzky. Yeah. Which you have to say every time.
No, everyone says that.
Yeah. It's mandatory. You sign
That's like when you say, I'm from Moose Jaw, the home of nobody.
Right. I'd rather have nobody than Wayne Gretzky, I think.
When you first decided you were moving up to Barrie, you put it up on the Facebooks.
Sure.
And what was the impetus?
My wife got a job up in Barrie, so obviously if someone's going to come back and forth into a town, it's going to be me coming here, so because I only work during the day a few days for cartoon reasons, so that's why we decided to move to Barrie, and I'm done. I'm pretty much done with the game in this town. I just like to do my own shows and my little cartoon voices, and then that's it. The game is just getting too crazy here.
And what do you mean by the game, Darren?
Just, you know, chasing things and having to justify yourself, and you think that you don't have to do that anymore, but you do. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be 25 years in, it doesn't mean anything.
So, did you own your home here in Toronto?
Yes.
So that's very nice.
Yes.
To sell at Toronto prices and buy at Barrie prices?
Yes.
Very nice. What are you going to do with the nest egg?
Well, the nest egg is taken up by Barrie because, unfortunately, I sold a year too late.
Oh.
Right? So if this is last year, I'd be like, yeah, Barrie. I own Barrie. I'm the mayor of Barrie.
I just bought Barrie.
I just bought it. But now it's like I have a little almost paid for home in Barrie where here I had a mortgage.
Oh, okay. That's
well,
good.
Well,
that's good.
It's still, you don't, whether you sold a year or not ago, you still got on the right side of the equation. Because you bought your home years ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago. So I've done well. I'm not complaining. I'm just, everyone's like, oh, man, you must have made $1 million. No, I didn't do that, but I did fine.
You mentioned that, and I don't know if we've talked about this a lot. You've been on the show so many times, I forget if we've explored the idea that you basically, besides being a, you know, pretty great comic, you do a lot of cartoons. Is that really your every, is it, will you be doing a voice of a cartoon every week or a couple times a month, or
like,
how does it work?
Like, right now I'm on a schedule because I'm on a show. Every 2 weeks I'm in for about an hour. So that's my life of Toronto. So if I live in Barrie, I only have to come in once every 2 weeks right now. So it's like, why am I here? Why am I paying
so
Toronto prices?
And I've been up in Barrie a bunch of times over the last couple of years now that I've been doing stand-up again.
Yeah, you're doing a lot of shows up there.
It's a great town.
Yeah.
You want to do? You want to go work out some material? There's Laffy Taffy.
Yeah.
There's the
Thursday night room.
Thursday night room.
Yeah.
You know, KJ and I. Now we have you up there. We'll do some stuff together. It's fine.
Right.
And with your schedule of doing voiceover, and this, I think, why would you bother?
Well, you know, I don't want to pay Toronto prices. I'm still the father to three kids. My kids will have a better life. It'll be a little less crazy. And I don't have to act like I'm in the game anymore. I'm just doing my own shows. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know. I had my run, you know. I'm old and fat now. I'm going to enjoy the wilderness and take up woodworking, which was my first love. I'm going to start doing that full time.
Well, good for you.
Could you make me one of those signs that people used to put out in front? The Glassmans.
Yes.
You know, you would see, remember the woodwork?
Yes.
Yeah. You'd see that in front of people's homes. You'd go, oh, those poor people. They have a kid in high school.
Yeah. I'm going to take some Georgian College courses. I'm going to start glass blowing. I'm going to start glass blowing.
Oh, like you haven't.
Really?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, I'm a glassman.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's where it was going, Fred.
Oh, okay,
Fred took it.
Sorry,
Fred took
college course.
So did you buy a rural property?
No, but I, you know, bought a bigger house in the suburb, you know.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very good.
I'm looking forward to it. Right now, I actually own both homes, so I have that problem. So when the windstorm came, I had two roofs fly off, two fences falling down. It's good. That's what I need. Yeah, that's all I need in my life. My house got Roseanne'd, you know?
Yeah, I got. I had that when I was getting out of the matrimonial home, as my lawyer called it. So at one point, I owned the matrimonial home. I bought my ex-wife Randy a house, and I'd put an offer in on another house, and they were all, I was like a real estate baron for about 5 weeks. I'm like, I own millions of dollars of junk on paper.
Yeah. 4 months of two mortgages, two hydros, two Rogers, two internets. It's been crazy, but
you've since sold your Toronto home?
June 29th is the day I move out.
Yay!
So, last day of school, you know, school year. My kids finish there, and then we get out.
And your kids are...
We become preppers. I'm going to get ready for the end of the world and wait and bury.
Stock up on beans and...
Yeah. Rice.
And bottles of water.
Bottles of water. And
how old is your oldest now? He's like 14?
15.
15?
How's he taking to
he's not enjoying
being
it.
Uprooted?
He's not enjoying it.
No, I bet.
The two young ones are like, you know, they eat cake. They don't care.
Yeah, we don't care.
You know, the older one is in high school, so he's formed a few friendships, which is not the best, but, you know... I moved high schools a few times, so... You
know. Look how you turned out.
Yeah, exactly. Come on.
Jeez, ain't the kid.
Sure.
Come on, it worked for me.
Yeah, look at Daddy.
Daddy seems happy.
Daddy has allergies all the time at home. That's why he cries. Not a lot of people I know get allergies in the winter, Dad. Oh. Well, your dad does.
How? What's your thoughts? You're Tim Niblett and I and Fred talking about Roseanne and the idea of, you know, it's just a joke.
Okay, let's go for that first. It's just a joke. In my opinion, it is a joke. It was a horrible joke, a wrong joke. And there's always an argument of what is allowed to be told and what should be told. There's two completely different things there. Is she allowed to make that joke? Yes, she is. Should she have made that joke? Absolutely not. And therefore, there's freedom of speech, but not freedom of consequence.
Mm-hmm.
When you compare it to Kathy Griffin, as an example, Kathy Griffin was just an individual who had a stand-up career, and people can vote with their dollars whether they want to support her or not on a comedy tour, and that's what happened to her. Roseanne is more than that. She's responsible for a whole television show and people's livelihoods, and that is the reason why she should never have made that kind of joke when she has that being responsible for.
The consequences of her actions yesterday.
Hundreds of jobs.
Lots of jobs, lots of money beyond just her. Because she's going to be fine. But
yes.
Those people that were working on her show, all excited about a second season of a show that could go on for years.
And there's been a lot of flack being like, well, you know, Sarah Gilbert knew Roseanne before, knew what she was like. They signed up for it. Okay, let's use that argument. But you know what? The lighting guy didn't. The lighting guy just got a job. The grips got a job. They're like, look, we're not happy it's Roseanne because I don't believe in her politics, but I need the money.
Yeah, but forget about her politics aside. The fact is... No, her old Roseanne persona was pre-Twitter.
Yes, yes.
And you can say people knew what she was like, and as Tim pointed out, there's a whole history now of her tweeting some pretty provocative things. But there was a whole group of people that were looking forward to season 2, 3, and 4.
Absolutely.
You start to make some pretty big money.
Well, can you imagine getting that call?
Yeah.
You know, from the rest of the cast.
Yeah.
They want to put this thing back together. It's like, wow, I have the chance to make some money again.
Yeah.
In this high profile. She didn't consider those people whatsoever.
No.
Although I heard just that, I don't know if it's a... Laurie Metcalf, right? She's on...
Laurie Metcalf,
right,
yes.
Was on that. That they may sort of reorganize it and...
Well, there's a couple of memes going
around.
Do it around
her and have everybody in the cast and sort of center it on her.
Yes.
She's super popular, too, but whether that would work.
So they have a sitcom called The Connors without... Like,
no,
she
it's
just
like called Lori. It's called Lori.
Oh.
There's a meme going around that says Lori, and it's just her.
Lori.
Yeah.
Hey, let's call
it
Lori.
And, you know, there's a picture on TMZ of John Goodman, and he just looks like death.
Mm-hmm.
He's walking his dog, and he just looks like death on his face.
He was so emotionally invested in the show.
Well, I heard him and Roseanne on Stern a couple months ago, and, you know, you can tell John Goodman really likes her. Obviously, she made him a lot of money.
Sure.
But he's just an actor. She's a comic.
And she you know, created the show. She's executive producer.
Yeah.
Like, all these people are like, let's just make a show called Lori. They don't understand how hard that is, because Roseanne owns that property. So no matter what, unless she sold it, then how are you going to take that character that she created and owns and then make it a viable product? That is the problem with it. It's a great idea, but you're not looking at it from a business standpoint. Also, everyone thinks ABC did this for the right reason. They only did it for one reason, and that's money. Because if you look at the last year and all the people, the Bill O'Reilly type situation, all the advertisers started pulling, and that's real money, and they knew that was going to happen with Roseanne. If they didn't think that was going to happen and had precedent with Bill O'Reilly or a few other examples, they never would have canceled it as quickly. It's money. Mm-hmm. It's got nothing else to do with that.
It's money, but it's more than just money. It's the idea that if you don't do it, you're going to lose money. Because in the old days, you could have waffled on this. You could have, you know, you could have said, well, it'll blow over. Things don't blow over anymore.
No.
Social media.
Even advertisers would have overlooked it years ago, thinking, I'm still going to push my product on this show.
Exactly. Because it's popular.
Now they can't afford it.
And that's what it is. You can say they did it for one reason, money. But, hey, Barky.
Hi.
But that one reason is because of the myriad of reasons surrounding it.
Right.
The fact that it happened so fast is what I was commenting.
Yeah, that usually that takes about a week.
It takes
least.
Time. Exactly. It happened immediately.
I didn't even wait for blowback.
The guy Fishman, I believe, at ABC, literally was like, "Okay, we're done here."
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's a game changer. Yeah. I think that they did it within 2 hours.
Hours of it. Yeah.
Like, but you know, I wonder if, not to project what might have happened, I think they already had meetings leading up to this. That if Roseanne does something very stupid, we have to be willing to do something very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So because of how fast it is, I wonder if they already had that meeting. It's like, look, as long as she plays fair, the show is on. But the second she does anything crazy that she'd done in the past of these tweets that we're talking about, show's over. Mm-hmm. And I bet they already had that meeting, or at least a basic discussion of damage control Roseanne Barr.
I think you're right.
Well, let this be a lesson, to people. Because, I mean, when you figure how quickly that show skyrocketed back to number one and made all those people money again, and they were quick to do this, they could do it to anyone then, obviously.
Oh, yeah, they can do it to anyone. Anyone. Anyone can get fired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, there was a time, Darren, you may not believe this, but Humble and Fred, no one fired us.
Wow.
And then once they got the taste of it, it was like blood in the water.
Sure. It was like a Subway card. After every sixth firing, you get a free sandwich.
The taste of money.
I tell the story that from 1977 to 2006, in your case, 2005. People would say, oh, you're in radio. How many times have you been fired? And I'd say, none. It's weird.
Yeah.
And then it happened for the first time in 2006, and then people couldn't stop.
This is Humble and Fred.
There's more to the always funny Darren Frost coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong on air and online. This is The Best of Humble and Fred. First, a couple of very important announcements.
Hey, how about that? The Spearhead Brewing Company out of Kingston, Ontario. They've teamed up with Sam Roberts, the Sam Roberts Band, to present the Sam Roberts Band Ale, an American amber ale brewed at 4.5%. English and American ale has characteristics of caramel, biscuit, and a dry, zesty finish with a touch of hop bitterness that strikes a refreshing chord. I'll tell you, it's good. Spearhead Brewing Company, Kingston, Ontario. Sam Roberts Band Ale. Try one this weekend.
Here's what you do. If you want to use cannabis better, there's only one thing to do. Download the Strain Print app. By the way, spoke to them yesterday. They're in for the rest of the year, people.
That's right.
Plus, speaking of marijuana, we may be very close to signing a new company, and that may or may not become the new name of the Humble and Fred Studios for a period.
What?
And for a price. Things are happening. Check it out. Strain Print will guide you as to the cannabis experience you're looking for, whether it's anti-inflammatory, whether it's headaches, whether it's whatever the symptom, the relief is there. Strainprint.ca. Strainprint.ca. Use cannabis better.
This is Humble and Fred.
I introduced Rachel, my new girlfriend, to somebody yesterday, and I said, this is my friend. And then she asked me why she said, why did you say friend?
Here we go.
And I said, no, she did it kindly, because we're still at that stage. It wasn't like, why did you say that? She was just like, I'm curious.
Yeah.
I said, I don't know, I feel awkward at my age, nearly 100, saying girlfriend. Partner sounds weird. Paramours to whatever. Woman I'm doinking seems crass. I don't know. What do you think?
I think you can say girlfriend.
Think
I think
pull that off?
People in seniors' homes say girlfriend. I think you're
don't
fine.
Think.
Yeah. So.
You know, Howard, people hooked up to machines are still saying girlfriend.
Yes. And they wear bathing suits, so you're fine.
That's right. That's going to be me. I'm just going to be like, when I turn 60, I'm just going to wear my swimming costume.
Sure, all the time.
Mr. Glassman insists on being bathed in his bathing suit.
That's right.
Who's that old fella? That's Humble Howard. He's wearing a bathing suit. Since 2018, just started wearing
suits. SPF 50. SPF 50.
You know, I might start rocking one of those old timey swimming costumes. You know, with the stripes and the
wool.
Sure.
Like, weren't they wool?
Made of wool back then. Yeah. Back in the day, they were.
Do you see those people from the 30s and 40s?
I'm looking at one right now. I don't have to see them.
That's right.
What are you talking about? I don't got to Google. You're right here.
It's from the 30s and 40s, you know, wearing those costumes to swim. What's that?
You guys are live Google. That's what you are.
Live Google.
Live. Semi-live.
The thing is, this morning, I just opened the door of my truck, and he was out there with Stan, and it gave me a bit of a scare, actually, because they were right there.
Stan jumped on.
And what would you say, within what? 3 seconds I asked you about your shorts?
No, he opened the door. Stan jumped on him. He looked at me and went, why are you wearing your bathing suit?
Wow.
Yeah.
And Stan and I laughed. We chortled.
Yeah.
We had a nice chortle.
You could say my person. This is my person.
Yeah.
This is my sentient being.
That doesn't sound like property.
No, exactly. She said, I said, what do you say? And she said, well, I sometimes would introduce you as this is my guy. My guy.
Oh, okay.
But doesn't your heart play a part in that? Because if your heart really wasn't into it and you weren't really into the relationship, you'd probably be more reluctant to say girlfriend than friend.
Wow, he's not helping your case at all.
No, but it's true.
Well, no, but you're making the point is my heart is invested. Yeah. I just feel awkward saying this is my. We're going around.
Well, you don't say it like that, do you?
Yeah,
I'm my friend.
I'm my friend.
My friend.
Going steady.
Maybe it's
going steady.
No, maybe it's when we were a kid, we called it going around. You remember that? We had us.
That's what. Yep, going around.
Out. Never heard going around.
No, we're from the
going out. We're from the going out.
Yeah, we were going around.
Going around.
Yeah, it didn't make sense.
Wow, the 30s were weird.
I know. Wait a second. Going out isn't any more sophisticated.
No, I know, but going around. Going around where?
All right. Listen. What else do we have to talk about? We talked about Roseanne. The Uber rating. Okay, what's your Uber rating?
Oh, I don't even know. I barely use it.
Oh, okay.
So it's probably great.
Yeah, it's probably great.
Let's see if mine's gone up or down.
Okay, because I got a couple things here. This goes back a couple weeks ago when Lumby was hosting. I haven't had any. What are you at? I'm at 4.87 still. What are you?
I don't even know.
Okay.
I'm currently tipping my driver from last week. Whoops.
Ooh.
It just came up. Oh. Rate your trip with Gene.
Gene.
Oh, Gene.
He was from Syria. He was great.
My buddy Lumby, who is kind of like you, sort of super funny and angry at the same time.
Yeah, I know. I know Jeff.
We were joking back and forth. And I said, thinking my rating would be higher than his. I said, what's yours? And his was 4.88 and mine is 4.87. And I will carry that to the grave.
Right.
He's roasting me.
Yeah.
Anyway, I talked to him last week. He said, hey, he was taking an Uber, or as he called it, Uber. He's taking a Uber. I know. And he said what he did, because now it's a game with him. He said to the driver, you know, at the end, hey, I'll give you, the driver brought up ratings. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a 5-star rating if you give me. He's negotiating now.
That's the way to do it.
That's what's happening. Debbie Lynch sent us a note, said, long trip downtown, driver took wrong route. I voiced my distress. 2 short trips in the neighborhood, no tip, my rating dropped. 2 trips out of town, good tip, and my rating went up.
Right.
So that's how you do it.
Tip-based, yeah.
But what... So the driver wanted a better rating. How does that enter into his business, though?
Because if there's 9 cars in an area, the one with the best rating.
You choose? Or they just send based on rating?
I think Uber chooses.
Uber does. Oh, it's a computer program. So if you have a 5-rating driver, 4-rating drivers, then you will get it first.
Because it's better business.
It's better business.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's to the driver's advantage to get the rating up. But it's also, as Amanda and I were talking with Jeff, it's to the consumer's benefit too, because if you're mm-hmm. a 4.8 and somebody's a 3.8 mm-hmm. yeah. and there's and someone's a 4.8, you don't want that. There's something wrong with that. Maybe they're mm-hmm. rude, or they don't mm-hmm. They were slammed the door.
The driver can pass that job, so yeah. then the next person can take it.
I get it.
What do you right. got in your hand there? There's a story. It looks like you
want
to.
I do. I do. I don't know if you heard about this, but do you know who Michael Buffer is?
No.
He's the guy that invented Let's Get Ready to Rumble.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. Did you know he makes more than $5 million a fight because he owns that phrase? Did you know that?
Wow.
I'm like, sorry?
Exactly. The guy who says, "Let's get ready to rumble," he's worth more than $400 million because because he copyrighted that term. That's his term. So anytime anyone says it at a sporting event, he makes money. And there's been fights he's made more than $5 million. In fact, Sugar Ray Leonard once said that when he gets introduced by him, he makes him want to fight because it pisses him off so much.
Wow.
That's funny.
So why, Howard, would you just exclaim?
No, he's not. Around the world on HBO.
Isn't that crazy? It's crazy. That's the world
Ladies
we live in.
Gentlemen, from Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas. Let's get ready to rumble!
Well, I'll tell you, it's a trademark.
Now, I know.
For the thousands.
That seems crazy to me.
And I don't even follow any of that stuff, and I'm well aware of that.
I know, you know this term, of course, because you see it in clip after clip, yeah. right? Like,
yeah. I'm surprised they wouldn't just try to workshop something else. Let's do it!
Let's go around!
Let's be doing it!
Let's get ready for humble!
We're going around!
Anytime you're ready, we are too!
We're about to do some things!
$3 million! $3 million for fight.
$400 million?
Yes! There's other estimates he's worth up to 400 because he owns the trademark.
Right here.
How much a game?
He's or best known. Well, I don't know if he gets if that's exactly where it comes from.
It's all based on TV rights, right?
Well, he's
so
also
a big Tyson fight. He could probably.
He's also an entrepreneur. He's not getting paid. I don't think he's getting $5 million every time. That part said. He said he gets typically between $25,000 and $100,000 every time he utters those words at a fight.
Pretty good.
Yeah. On a handful of extremely rare occasions, he's been paid $1 million.
There we go.
Wow.
Because the TV rights and all the pay-per-view stuff.
That's
all
crazy, man.
Yeah. When I read that, I'm like, this is the world we live in.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Get your mind racing, eh?
Yeah.
Let's get this...
Party started!
...thing to go!
You know?
Time for boxing time.
Let's take it out.
You're ready.
For $500,000, he probably could do it in his bathing suit.
You laugh, but I'm very comfortable.
Well, that's what's
in
important.
My trunks.
And you know what I love about stuff like that? The first time.
Oh, yeah.
The first time he said that, or the first few times it started to roll, never in his wildest dreams.
Of course, right.
Did he think it would turn into that?
Yeah.
Not at all calculated that way.
Right. No.
I wonder at what point, what was the turning point where he was like, I'm copyright, this is a thing, mm-hmm. and I'm copywriting it. Like, I wonder how far in.
It was in 84, I think he did it.
Oh, yeah? Oh, that's pretty early on, right?
Late 80s. I think he started in 84 doing it, and then in the late 80s he copyrighted
it. Yeah. Smart.
Well, in the mid 80s, that's when WWF was at its.
That's right.
I mean, it's still strong nowadays, but back then it
was WWF? What's that?
World Wrestling
Federation. Yeah, but
he wasn't doing it for wrestling.
He did it at WrestleManias, I thought.
He was a boxing guy.
Yeah, but he also did do it at the WWF events. Yeah. WrestleMania. Yeah.
But I thought his popularity came from the boxing
world.
It did.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but like for WrestleMania on TV, they hire him.
Oh, sure.
And that's a lot of
money. That's what I would know it from.
Me too. Yeah. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, that and you're right, like 89, 88, 89, everybody knew who Hulk Hogan was, and they were all superstars.
Okay.
You know what I feel bad for? Planet of the Apes. Is it really fair to that movie?
No.
Now look at that movie now. Now it's not going to be seen.
You can never see it the same way. Well, it's like, you know, and those people that during the Obama, when they were comparing, that woman that compared Michelle Obama to a monkey.
Oh, the mayor?
Oh.
It's like, it's just why can't they get past color for some reason. And it's so weird. Like, you know, look what color's done to this room. I'm wearing a pair of lime green shorts and this all of a sudden racism.
I call them highlighter green.
This is what's happened.
Yes.
This is an example of color.
Yes. It's a microcosm in here. Yes, it is. It is.
And the hypocrisy of it beyond color. Who is Roseanne to criticize someone else's looks? Because if you look at her looks through the ages, it's like, really?
Well, the same way. Who are you to criticize my bathing trunks?
The thing about Roseanne is she had a brain injury, right?
She did?
Yes.
What happened?
Well, years ago, before she even really started, she had a brain injury. I don't know. She got in a car accident or something. Jesus. I'm talking the beginning of her career.
Who hasn't had a brain injury?
Well, yes.
Well, then give her show back. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come well, on. There we go. Racism.
That's what I call dated in the 80s. No, brain injury.
Exactly.
Darren Frost is coming to your town. Barry's the mayor of Barrie, Ontario.
This is Humble and Fred.
The comedians continue on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong. And up next, Aman al-Husseini. The Best of Humble and Fred on air and online. The very funny people continue. I'm Philip Pong. Welcome back to The Best of Humble and Fred on air and online. And up next on The Best of Humble and Fred, Aman al-Husseini.
This performer has appeared regularly on a lot of radio stations. And her television credits are, you know, your standard superstar of comedy, you know, the Comedy Network and these type of things. But there's another interesting aspect that whenever I read about her, I'm always intrigued by. And now we get to ask some questions of our guests. Please welcome to our program, Aman al-Husseini.
Hi. Oh, thank you, guys. All right. Thank you. So good to be here.
Of course it is.
I'm so excited I get to do your show. It's been like a dream. It's been on the to-do list.
Is it really?
Yeah.
For how long?
Totally. Years. I want to say years.
Are you a Toronto kid?
I'm not, but I've lived here like briefly, you know, between Montreal and New York. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I was intrigued because, you know, I doing some stand-up as well, and I saw that I was on the show with you this week. I put in for some spots at Yuck Yucks, and I got one. I was like, this is great, because I've wanted to see you. And you know what it's like, where everyone's doing different spots and stuff. But I thought, you know, if I get on the show Friday night, this way I can hang.
Yeah.
Get a chance to watch. And because, you know, there's lots of interesting comedians and performers, but your story is a little bit different. We should explain that Aman, am I saying it even remotely?
Yeah, you could say it like that. It could be said Iman? In many ways. Yeah, Aman is a
Iman?
Bit. Yeah, I like that.
Howard is very simple. It's a word.
Yeah.
Iman arrived in Canada in 2001.
1990. Yeah.
1990.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
2001 was September 11th.
Yes.
Yes.
And what is that? You came to the U.S. or what am I getting mixed up here?
So September 11th, unfortunately, is also my parents' wedding anniversary, but not in 2001.
No,
because that'd be
that
nuts.
Add up.
That's exactly. That would be horrible.
I mean, you look young.
Yeah. So I guess they confused one of my jokes statements about my parents' wedding anniversary with my coming to Canada. Maybe it's like a whole Muslim thing getting, I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of backstory here that's interesting. Yeah. What is this statement? Lesbians are the new gentlemen.
Oh, I just say that in the dating world, I feel like women try a bit harder, you know, like men used to back in the day.
Oh, when we were like suitors.
Yes, exactly.
Gentlemen callers.
Yes, exactly.
Well, why miss a man? May I just open this door for you and get you a tea cozy?
That's right.
That type of thing. Well, why do you say that?
Well, I just felt that way. So my wife is actually the first woman I hooked up with, and I married her. Because I'm obviously
talk about old fashioned.
A traditional Muslim woman, yes.
Does she call you her wife too? Is it a double thing? Like you're both wives?
She calls me her female husband. No, yeah, we're both wives, yes.
Okay. All right.
So how was that? I mean, not having seen your performance, I'm assuming a lot of this is part of the culture of your act. And how does that go over with your Muslim parents, especially because, you know, she's a Jew.
Yeah. The Jewish part is the least of their worries. So
they're like, wait a second. You're a lesbian. Forget the Jews.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Yeah. So that's what they focus on?
Yeah, they focus more on the female part rather than the Jewish part. Like I think they're like dreaming of a Jewish man for me at this point. So the Jewish is not the issue.
So they say stuff like, "How could you do this to us?"
Of course, yeah. And the crying and the being depressed and the whole thing. Yeah, it's awful.
Well, cuz you're from Palestine, your parents are, your wife Jess Solomon, also a comedian. A
hilarious comedian, yes.
I mean, that's an, talk about annoying.
I know.
I mean, I forget about the Muslim and Jew. It's just, who needs another comic in the relationship?
You know what? I never, sorry.
No, you go ahead, because yeah, I've got a Canadian question for you.
I just wanted to say that it's so weird. I ended up, you know, be careful what you wish for, because I said I'm never, you know, going to be with another comic. I just hated the idea of, like, the possible competition, you know, and then I'm like, I definitely didn't think that I'd end up with a woman either, and to make things worse, she's also a Taurus, and I'm a Leo, and that does not go together.
That's the worst thing of all.
I don't know how could you do
that. Not compatible at all.
You're making hell. What happens with you and Jess? Because you know, in my early years of doing stand-up, I dated a couple of comedians, but I don't think we for like a week.
I love the air quotes. Yeah, I dated.
You know that thing you did when you just had a lot of sex with people. What is it like in a relationship? You know, in the '80s before it got weird, when you guys might see something, be at a restaurant, over at a party, or something, and all of a sudden a premise bubbles to the surface as it does.
Yeah,
who grabs it? Who gets it? Is there like a code between you and Jess? Like, wait a second, I thought I said that first. If you want this relationship to work, you let me have it.
You know what? We're so different. So our ways of thinking are so different. The way we deliver jokes is so different. So whoever says something that's funny, it keeps it. Well, if I make her laugh by saying something, then it's mine.
But in that situation, isn't it like a joint bank account? You both get to withdraw from it?
Sure, yeah. I mean, like I said, whoever forms it in a better way gets to keep it. But uh-huh. Yeah, we're definitely like rooting for each other to make it.
Yeah, you're not pissed off if she uses one of your jokes.
Like, not at all. No. No, believe me. Like I said, one of us.
Why wouldn't you be though?
Mm-hmm. Huh?
Why wouldn't you be?
Because it's your wife.
Yeah, I don't care.
There's license there.
It's my bit.
It's just we're competitive in a different way. We're competitive to become the housewife. So we're like excited for the other one to succeed. You see?
Oh, that's great. Well, listen, we want to talk a little bit more. Iman El Husseini.
I love that.
Iman. You know, it's interesting that you said that your mother and father were more. It shook them up more that you were going to be in a relationship with another female versus. So was there and none of the sort of like, okay, so now that we're over the female part, really a Jew? Seriously.
I think my parents always knew that I wasn't going to marry within the faith. I'm very, you know, unconventional. I always push, even in my stand-up, I talk a lot about being against same-race marriages and that sort of thing, you know, so.
But there's pushing and then there's marrying, you know.
No, and I mean, I've had Jewish friends. One of my best friends was Jewish, too, growing up, so they were exposed to that. I don't think, they're not anti-Semitic, you know, that's what we're going
it's
towards.
Funny. Well, no, I was going to say, you know, it's funny, because I grew up in a Jewish home, but in a very small town in Saskatchewan, and so basically after my bar mitzvah, last kid bar mitzvah in Moose Jaw, which is the name of my special, also my other special, the
that's
Prairie
hilarious.
Jew. The Prairie Jew, tonight
I love
after,
that.
Tonight after Kim's Convenience. Once I got sort of through that early Jewish upbringing, I really became very sort of secular and atheist, whatever, but I did marry a Jewish woman. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one of my brothers to do it. And I found some, I would say, a strange comfort in the familiarity. But did you find with her there's some things that are so different? You know, obviously, culturally, you can't relate to or... Or like myself, she doesn't practice, and
she doesn't really practice. I mean, we do celebrate the big Jewish holidays,
well,
and Passover,
saying.
And that sort of thing. I mean, I was always kind of fascinated by religion and just like exposed to so many different things by having a Jewish best friend growing up, going to her brother's bar mitzvah, you know, the seders, my Greek friend, and doing Greek Easter and Christmas and that whole thing. So it was never. Nothing really, I mean, shocked me. It's just mm-hmm. like different cultural practices.
And, you know, religion is a way of bringing people together for family functions is really the best part of it. You know, like I still went to the odd Seder. You know, I got invited to one this year. And it's really more about, less about the Sky Muppet looking down upon us and writing in the Book of Life or whatever,
sure.
the Real Estate News or whatever he does.
Sure.
But, you know, more about family. The same way that, you know, a non-religious Christmas is for you guys. You know, you get together, you've got a bunch
excuse,
of people.
Yeah,
well, it's a good excuse. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
you know, it's probably the best. And but it's interesting that in this day and age, you guys aren't having the...
Yeah, and I think it's because our, like, core beliefs are the same. You know, I'm Jewish, she's Jewish, I'm Muslim, we both love pork. You know, it's just those are the important things to keep track of in a relationship.
That is the only best stuff.
Now, with your sexuality and your parents...
Speaking of porking,
where on their scale of 1 to 10 is your happiness? Like, they're upset and they're not comfortable with it, but do they give in and go, as long as you're happy?
No.
Is it more about what makes them happy?
It's what makes them happy, because they feel like they've sacrificed so much, which they have, and they come from a different generation, and... You know, to them, it's just unacceptable. It's not even a thing of, like...
Not debatable.
Yeah, exactly. Right. They're just like, you're doing something wrong. Like, that's... they're 100%.
Yeah, something wrong, according to a pamphlet that was written by people who didn't know why the sun came
out. Which is so weird. I mean, like, how could you not see how happy I am? And that should bring you so much joy, but they don't care.
That's all you want for your kid.
That's it. But growing up, that was always my clash with my family, is they're concerned with what people are going to say.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know, unbelievable.
There's a comedian, and again, excuse me, I'm not sure if he's Muslim or... But Hasan Minhaj...
Oh, yeah, he is.
He's Muslim.
Yeah.
So there's... And you've seen his special?
Yeah, it's
amazing.
Great. Yeah.
I've seen it a bunch of times. But there's a point in it where he says, and he says it in whatever language, that his parents, his father was... It's all about what will people think.
Mm-hmm.
And in that culture, in your culture, that's a very strong tenet of
100%.
It. 100%. And it's strong in other religions, too. It's not singling out Muslims. But it's very strong, again, culturally, about what others will think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even in waspy, non-religious Scarborough growing up back in the 60s, there was an element of that. And I think slowly but surely we've drifted away from that. The whole keeping up with the Joneses thing.
Yeah, that's like, basically what will people think.
Yeah.
If we don't drive the right car.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of it is like such a double life almost, because it's just keeping up appearances. So you're not really like demonstrating any sincere...
There's no authenticity about
it. At all. So what the hell is the point? Yeah.
Well, that is. There is no...
That's it.
The point, and we're both parents, the point is your children's happiness is paramount. Your own happiness should also be paramount. But where is it at now? And you and Jess have been together for a while.
Mm-hmm.
What is a while? How long?
So 7 years total, almost 3 years married.
And what is life like now with you and your family? And also talk, if you don't mind, a little bit about her family.
Sure. I mean, with my family, it's so hard. I have such an issue with them. I was just in Montreal. I tried to like revive our relationship. We sort of been kind of, because they didn't come to the wedding when we got married. Which is like, it really destroyed me. And it was so crazy too, because we'd go out to dinner with them, like Jess and I, and they're so lovely to her. So she was convinced that they were going to come. And I'm like, no, trust me, I know my parents. They're just being nice because they're nice people, but they're not coming to the wedding. So they didn't come to the wedding. I stopped talking to them for a couple of years. But here and there, we'd like send messages on birthdays and whatever. Anyway, and I was just there to see them, to see like if we could develop a relationship. And we want them to be part of our life. But they're caught up with such other issues. The way they're living their life is just so, so miserable.
I got to tell you, it's heartbreaking to hear this. And I'll tell you, you know, if I go a couple of days and I don't have see my kids or speak to them,
it's the worst.
I don't even know. It was funny because my one daughter is talking about maybe moving away. I'm going, well, I'm moving with you then.
Yeah.
I'll just move.
Yeah.
Who's that? That's just my dad. He follows me.
Yeah.
So their problem is at religious based.
But they're not even religious. They don't even practice.
What you said when they said this isn't right.
Yeah.
Is that where the argument comes from, though?
I guess so. I don't know if it's religious or more of like a cultural thing.
Yeah, it's cultural.
You know?
But it's pretty tied together.
In that case, it really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas her parents, first of all, we lost her father, unfortunately. He passed away a couple of years ago, and that's 3 years ago. Yeah, 3 years ago, exactly. And he was the nicest out of all of the parents. Not that he was on board. I don't think her parents were excited about this wedding. I don't know if it...
They probably had some of the same concerns. What will our friends think? How is this going to show up at...
And let's be fair. It's outside of the norm. Any parent would be taken aback. And if they weren't, they would be
wise. Nobody's like high-fiving their kid when they come out of the closet.
But it's how you deal with it once it's established.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
So her parents are a lot more inclusive, mm-hmm. but they're still not super excited about it. So it's not like a pleasant... It's never pleasant on either side.
Well, I mean, I know what you just said there is true to a point, Fred. I think as the years go by, as generations go, your kids are... My kids don't have the same hang-ups about it because... And, then, you know, we're much older than you, but, you know, you're from an older generation than my daughters who are 23 and 20, and we've talked about your kids as well. They just have grown up with people of every... Not only every culture and color, but of every persuasion.
Sure.
So it's not it won't be as shocking to their parents and them as parents anymore. But that's still a little ways away.
But your daughter walks through the door with a boy, and it's a completely different attitude if she walks in with a girl. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you have to take a double take and think about this and digest it a bit. That's what I didn't understand.
Our generation, maybe, but not our kids' generation.
We'll see.
That's what I didn't understand.
Less. It'll be less.
It'll always be a bit less. Yeah. Well, that's why I was always shocked with my dad being upset about the whole thing, because he's like all of my life warning me and my sister to stay away from boys. Stay away from boys. Men are pigs. I'm like, Dad, ta-da.
That's fantastic.
Look what I brought home.
What better argument is there than that?
That's it.
I can just see your mother. Okay, let me just write. Okay, first of all, it's a girl. And it's a juju.
Yeah, it's funny.
Have you had boyfriends?
Never serious relationships.
You always had those feelings?
Of being with girls? Mm-hmm. Not really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, we still both identify as bisexual. Mm-hmm. Like, we're still very attracted to men. It's just we're in love with each other.
But, you know, when you see someone like Fred and I, that's like, oh, yeah, good thing. That's enough. Glad we're out of that gene pool. Iman El Husseini, tonight, tomorrow. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, because sometimes I was just saying to you during the little break there that, you know, I've been doing a lot of emceeing at Yuck Yucks recently. Mm-hmm. And I like it because I like being part of the whole show. But tomorrow night I'm just doing that middle spot. But I'm going to hang around unless I just completely shit the bed. Because usually, because once there's so much shame around bombies, like I've got to leave.
Yeah.
But hopefully my little, you know, nonsense won't, you know.
I'm sure it's going to be great.
It'll be just fine.
I'm sure.
Will Jess be there?
No, she's in Calgary. Oh. Actually, she's going to Edmonton. What are we today? Tuesday. Yeah, she's heading. She just headlined Calgary Yuck Yucks, and she's on her way to Edmonton.
If you guys ever do shows together, is it weird? Because who headlines then? Because you're both feature act. You're both headliners.
Yeah. Whatever she wants. She's the boss.
You know, we got to get...
Yeah, what? I don't care. I mean, I'm easy. I've been doing it a bit longer than her, and she's a bit older than me, so it's really, you know, like I said, we're rooting for the other one to succeed so the other one could be a housewife.
Like, check this out, though. I mean, it's very interesting because Jess, Iman's wife, is a former UN war crimes lawyer.
Yeah. Wait. Amal Clooney was her co-worker.
Holy.
Yeah, when I read that, I was like, oh, yeah, great. She's at some dinky, stupid comedy club tonight.
This is Humble and Fred.
Just a few more minutes with Iman El Husseini coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. Thanks for listening on air and online. Happy Thanksgiving, by the way. First, we have a couple of very important announcements.
And it's Humble and Fred. As you well know, this program brought to you by Paytm. If you're looking to pay through mobile, there's only one way to go, and that's using this amazing payment system.
And how about this? Download the Paytm Canada app for free in either Google Play or the App Store, or visit paytm.ca to sign up and create your Paytm account using the referral code Humble and Fred. That's A-N-D, Humble and Fred. When you sign up with the Humble and Fred referral code, you'll get a $10 Paytm cash bonus that you can use towards a bill payment or a reward purchase. Enter the promo code Humble and Fred, A-N-D,
Just bonus.
Canada's number one plan for employee benefits. The Chamber's plan is Canada's leading group benefit plan for small firms, say 1 to 100 employees. If you'd like, go to chamberplan.ca and get a free quote. In fact, we highly recommend this because you'll see very quickly how easy it is, how simple it is, how affordable it is to have company benefits for your small company. 30,000 Canadian businesses now part of this. They've been around for 40 years. Simple, stable, smart. It's fantastic. Health and dental insurance, including other insurance. Chamberplan.ca. Get a free quote today.
This is Humble and Fred.
And we're still hanging out with the Iman El Husseini, who's the most loveliest person. She's a very nice person. And Jess Solomon's a very, very funny headlining stand-up comedian who is Iman's better half, whatever you people want to call her. Wife. It's International Women's Day, you know.
It's true.
So Jess, Fred, was a former UN war crimes lawyer who, you know, tonight will be going, "Hey, where are you from?" at some comedy club.
I didn't know comedy paid that well. That she could.
That's what I don't understand. Talk about how disappointed are her parents. They're like, wait a second. Forget about marrying a woman. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, it was such a great job that she had. And I love all of her UN people. They're just so hilarious. And they have such a dark sense of humor. She just did not enjoy practicing the actual law. She loved what the job entailed. She loves her coworkers. But she was bored with the law, you know, always wanted to. That's the thing. It's like me with politics. My dad always wanted me to be a politician. And I'm just like, I'd rather just be a stand up and get my point across that way, mm-hmm. instead of like having to censor myself and watch what I have to say. And I feel like on a certain level, Jess feels the same way with law.
Do you feel, because, you know, Fred and I have talked about the stand up scene in its current form, and I was part of it in the 80s for a long time, but now it seems that there aren't very many people, in my experience, last year or so that I've been out hitting mics, that do a lot of stuff about politics. It's not a very common... Now, part of it is because these young kids don't really know how to handle it. But do you talk about politics in your...
I do. I mean, my whole thing is about politics, religion. It's really, you know, it's about my life. So I touch upon everything that's important for me. And I do feel like people steer away from politics because it makes people uncomfortable. So when somebody's coming to a comedy show, they want to escape. They don't want to hear what your opinions are or what... They just make me laugh, you know?
Do you think they're uncomfortable or... Do you think part of that is people don't follow politics, so they might not even know what you're talking about?
That's a possibility, yeah. too. But I could honestly tell you when Trump got elected in the States and we started talking about that on stage, people were either like Trump supporters mm-hmm. or did not want to hear about it.
That's what mm-hmm. I found.
So,
because yeah. I listened when I was in Mexico, I had recorded a bunch of sets and I just want to sit down one day and see if there were some moments that I might pick out and go, oh, that worked. I want to use it again. And I listened back to something I had done in January of 2017. Do you want her to look at you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just for a photo. There you go.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Okay. But I mean, you could just say, hey, Justin. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I listened back to it, and it was a couple minutes about Trump, and I do this little bit about I've written a short story about him, and then I sort of stopped doing it because there was such an avalanche of stuff. But guys do this. They say, oh,
what
I don't
mean
wanna,
avalanche.
Well, there's
of stuff.
So much Trump stuff.
Oh, right. Okay.
But there's this thing I've heard comics say, oh, now if I do a Trump joke, it's hack. Well, it's not if it's good.
Sure.
But you might be the only one on the show that night that's even mentioning it now.
Yeah.
And I was emceeing a couple weeks ago, and there was somebody from the States there, and we all sort of tiptoed around the Trump thing. But it was Martha Chavez. It was last week, and she's just full on, you know? And I like that about her.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Leans into it.
I mean, even her Facebook is like filled with that stuff. I love that.
She leans into it,
yeah.
Which I respect. Now, again, I don't care if you think what her point of view is. It's not even the point. The point is she doesn't shy away from it.
Yeah.
So what is your political bent?
I mean, I always joke that I'm so left-handed. I'm like so left-wing. I'm just mm-hmm. so, you know, I really love justice. I love equality. I like, you know, universal health care. I have free education. The States is really, now that I live there and I see it firsthand, it tries everything to keep the poor down. Mm-hmm. That whole idea of the American dream is not a real thing. The American dream is really for the rich, and that's it.
And where do you live? You live in...
I live in New York City, so it's like a really nice bubble where we all pretend that Hillary Clinton is president. But,
and it's so funny, because out comes Bernie Sanders, who is talking about, oh, maybe we should give everyone some health care. Socialist, communist. He'd be right-wing in this country.
Yeah.
But there, that the idea of let's take care of each other seems to...
It terrifies them.
But yet they would, you know, the individual American that you meet is kind-hearted and does want the best. Some of them, you know, a lot of them want the best for their communities. But for some reason, they don't want the government to do it. Yet the government maintains the roads, maintains the police force, maintains fire and all that other stuff. So well,
what do you do for health care in New York City?
I pay for it.
How much?
It's a lot of money. Like, $2,000 a month.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Isn't this a crazy way they bash the Canadian system, which has its issues, but nobody is left behind in the Canadian
That's
system.
That's right.
Regardless of... There's lots of people left behind down there, isn't there?
That's right.
They're laying on the streets.
Anyway, we're all looking forward. I certainly am looking forward to getting a chance to see you, man. And... see this wonderful and beautiful spirit you have, beautiful spirit.
Thank you. That's
you have
very
a beautiful
nice.
Spirit. I don't know why you have a beautiful spirit. Why'd you have to do that? Why are people nice?
This is Humble and Fred.
A national treasure coming up on the Best of Humble and Fred. We've got the great Carla Collins coming up. This is the Best of Humble and Fred Thanksgiving edition on air and online. Welcome back. You're listening to the Best of Humble and Fred on air and online. I'm Philip Hong. Thank you very much for listening, by the way. Happy Thanksgiving. We have a wonderful comedian. She was also a radio personality. Here's the great Carla Collins.
You know that series that Letterman's doing? My next guest needs no introduction.
Right.
Yeah. Well, if anyone on our program qualified for that caveat, if you will, it is our next guest. She is simply Carla Collins.
Hi, fellas. It's well to be here.
Hi, Carla.
Nice to see you as usual.
Nice to see you too, Fred.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Phil, Gunsel, and of course, my Junicorn.
Okay, what do you call me?
Junicorn.
No, Canadian
Goldbloom.
Goldbloom.
You prefer that one.
I love that one. I just love it. It just makes me feel like that you and I have a special bond. And as much as I, you know, have spent time in your presence, I'm always delighted to see you again.
As am I. I know we've really had an evolution with our relationship.
Yes, we have. It's funny when you sat down, I always think of that. I was thinking, well, you know, where we were 10 or 15 years ago. And now
that's when Fred wanted to taser me because I was so perky.
Did I?
Yeah. We have the clip. You're like, hey, Howard, you're like Carla Collins. I just want to taser her and just bring her down a few notches.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was you. Yeah, always cruel.
Why was I so nasty in those days?
I don't know, because I was so perky. I wanted to punch me in the face. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm kind
of... It's funny.
Like
I
you
saw,
boys now.
I saw a clip.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Griff Henderson?
Yes.
Now, Griff Henderson, when we went to the mix, didn't they bounce him? And there was a little bitterness there or something? But anyway, it showed a clip. There was a clip of several phases of his career, and one you're in it.
I know, because it was Carla and Company, and Griff was co-host. I love Griff.
Yeah.
I'm very close to he and his family, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing now, but
He is out east.
Griff is out east?
Yeah, he's in, what? Nova Scotia.
People's named Griff.
And he told,
Griff Henderson, not his actual name.
He came off a song, told a couple of jokey jokes, and then you did the weather.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't show like
that.
I didn't show over there.
I
like
knew
that.
You'd like that. Yeah.
Hey, humble Phil, Colleen, and Bob. Yeah.
I know that's because the mixer's always 100 people that
well,
you have.
The thing is, with there was a period of time when Carla was working at a rival radio station, and Fred and I thought it would be clever to take constant shots at you.
Yes,
and
I enjoy that it was a one-way rivalry too, because I would just hear, you know, Humble and Frederick taking the piss out of you, and I'm like,
no,
okay.
Well, we were jealous because you were
very jealous.
We were. You were famous on TV, and you
good
were
looking.
Very beautiful. Mm. If we may say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you never have to stop saying that. You've got 6 hours to stop.
Mm-hmm. So, And I think we were a little jealous of the fact that you had all this notoriety, and then you also had
a
big,
good looking. We hate morning, people that are good looking.
A big morning show, and all we had was whatever we
each
had.
Other, and that's all right. You ever needed.
That's right.
But now look at I put in a big effort. You know, getting up at 6 a.m. Do you boys think it's easy in this weather to find a slutty turtleneck? It's not, and yet I found one with a sunroof.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, where is the rest of your shirt?
Well,
Carla Collins. Anyway, you know what? Every time for the last couple of years you've come on, we've spent a little bit of time talking about how we're all buddies now, and that's great. But one of the things that we were sort of giggling about you being here is it's super cold, and you live in Los Angeles. So you're here for a reason. Are you here, Carla, to do good?
I am here to do good.
What?
Yes. Tonight, I will be hosting the 8th Annual Powering for Prosperity Awards.
Ooh.
What's that you say?
Yes.
I'm glad you asked, Humble. It's the Ontario Sustainable Energy Association. They're an advocate. They're an educator for individuals, the public, government, industry partners. And tonight, they recognize leadership in the field. We've got the Minister of Environment talking, keynote speakers. I'm your charming and lovely host in a gown. It's quite fetching, Fred. I think you'd say yes.
So it's not really a charity.
No, it's a whole association. It's right. Trying to find energy-efficient solutions.
Okay, so it's not a charity, so you can really go after them for a fee, right? An appearance fee, right?
What?
Not really. I think they got quite a bargain.
They're doing just fine.
Yeah, Fred, everybody wins on this.
So far, Fred
Why
wants
is
to
Fred
know.
Always... Remember last time he's like, Carla, you just got divorced. Do you feel like a total loser?
I did not.
Yes.
Do you find that...
Yes.
We've got to
yes,
take,
you did.
Do you
I'm
find your so, failure?
I'm just saying it when it's a charity, right?
I'm over here trying to save the planet, and Fred's like, did you get some good coin for
points.
This?
How many are you getting some extra points? Who's your agent?
They flew me private in that I had my own seat.
Yeah, that's right. I got a private jet here. Of course, I had to share it with some folks.
Well, you know, we all share, I think. Humble knows how I feel about the environment and planet. It's something we talk about.
Oh, yes.
And
do
people.
You? Yes, we talk about it all the time.
All the time. Mm-hmm. That's our boudoir talk. And
that's
I'm
right.
like,
that's
slower, tell me how you save energy. Well, wash your clothes in cold. And he loves that. I have an environmental sex line, Fred, that's really become quite popular in Los Angeles during these apocalyptic biblical times where we have fires and mudslides. And
Are you still living in Santa Monica?
Venice. Right.
That's right. You're living in Venice, but you were in Santa Monica.
I was in Malibu.
That's what I meant. Malibu.
Yes.
You were in Malibu.
I was
not
Malibu
Santa
Barbie. Now I'm Venice Barbie.
So are
I
you
get hit
near...
on by the homeless quite a bit.
Who doesn't? Are you near fire?
No, I was not near the fires.
Where are fire?
Fire in Ventura County, brave one. Listen, Dances with Shiksas.
I know. I did that.
His Native American name.
I decided to drop the S from fire. So where is fire?
Glass man.
That's right. Glass man half full.
Fire is ball in sky.
Fire in sky and on
this
ground.
This feels like it's not really politically correct. I'm pretty sure. And I feel like I could make this joke because I have Native American in me.
Ah.
I do.
And I feel like I can
do
make
really?
This joke because I'm
well,
old.
Look at these cheekbones. You can bungee jump off of
are
them.
Are you a card
I'm off-white. I'm off-white.
Do you have to pay taxes?
Yes.
Oh.
Do you get free smokes?
Only Indian spirits. It's like smoking a carrot.
Are you allowed...
do your smokes come in a clear plastic bag?
Absolutely. Because
no,
I'm a classy
packaging.
Lady.
Just a big bag of smokes.
Nothing wrong with that.
Can you run guns through the border?
Absolutely. Oh, it's all about saving the environment, Fred.
That's right.
I'm a mule. I'm a gun runner.
Was your carry-on just a big...
I just dabble in human trafficking, but
smokes.
Nothing that you would get too upset about.
So fire.
Yes.
Where is fire?
The fire was in Ventura County. It was quite a few different places, as you know. And the other issue, Phil, who's the only one listening to me now?
Yeah, well, no, I'm taking a call.
Howard's Googling nude pictures of me.
No. I don't have to Google them.
I have to. It's like a two-year-old. I have to constantly keep his attention.
Listen,
look, it's little Carla.
First of all, I don't have to Google them. I have them on my phone. No, this is a listener who said, I want to know how her dating life is going.
Aw, thanks, listener. I got to say it's...
He also, by the way, put together a little poem, Fires and Mudslides, Droughts and Mayhem. These are a few of my favorite things. That's from Ian Service.
Hi, Ian.
Who adores you.
How are you? I love your listeners. They're always happy when they come on. Ian, I have to say that, let's just say I'm focused on my career.
Mm-hmm.
Because, the dating life is quiet. But I'm getting to the point now where I'm like, okay, let's get back out there.
Yeah.
But you have to take a little time and
Well,
I don't even know what guys think of me. It's such a weird thing. You know, I've been a serial monogamist. I've been, since birth, almost always engaged or married in a steady relationship.
Yeah, so your first relationship really weird. Was in preschool, you told
it
me.
It was. Yeah. Well, I'm French-Canadian. Celine Dion had her manager, and I had my babysitter.
So that's why Carla's here. She's
R.
here
Kelly.
To save the environment.
No, I feel bad because in Brampton now, you know, we have the green bin and the blue bin.
Mm-hmm.
And often I'm putting, like, green stuff in the blue bin and and then blue stuff in the green bin. And my wife...
This feels like a weird
Sesame
Street.
She's on me all the time. You know, there's a sign in Peel now. That says,
well, that's good for you that your wife's on you all the time.
Yeah, please do not put car parts in your blue bin.
No.
You know, you can't see it now, right? So people just throw whatever...
What was that thing?
Oh, yeah.
Phil, what did I say the other day about the environment? I said, you know, that should be their slogan. Just in case.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about somebody, I don't even know whether it was Trump or something, talking about climate denying. And I said, well, yes. You know, the movement should just adopt the idea that, okay, maybe there isn't anything up with, there's no kerfuffles with the
really, because there's no clues whatsoever.
But just in case,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Just in case,
safety
let's
net.
Do something.
Absolutely.
Because all those people that think there's no, like, I guess it was Don Cherry, that's how we started talking about it. Don Cherry saying, you know, oh, it's cold outside, what happened to global warming? Okay, clown man.
Again, but we have to explain that again?
No,
it's extreme
exactly.
weather. It's actually, that's why they changed it to climate change instead of global warming, because everybody's like, it's really cold now.
No, I know.
Yeah.
But I would say that's their problem. It's almost a PR thing because, you know, the average...
Isn't everything.
The average person just goes... That's the level they think. Well, it can't be getting warmer because it's cold out today. But just in case... And just in case we're screwing it up, why don't we do something? Amanda Barker's here. She's an angel.
I'm the face. Hi. How are you, sweetheart?
Barker just sat down to angel the place up.
I'm awesome. The face of greenon.ca.
There's a sister wife
in
here.
In fact.
Yeah, she was...
I am.
Have you seen her commercial? It's amazing, the one that you did.
You'd have to live here.
I haven't played it yet.
Green on, but it's the same. I think it's the same thing.
Green?
You can just bring that down a little bit if you want.
What's that?
Much
my
I
voice?
Love the ladies.
Oh, wow.
I'm the voice of Green.
Do you like that idea, though, that it just seems so obvious that, you know what, let's just hedge our bet. Like, if you know, and even the people that say there's nothing wrong with the environment, maybe they could be sort of swayed if we made them think that, okay, you might be right.
It's
but,
a
what
plan
if,
B?
But what if you're wrong? What if you're wrong and there is a problem with the environment? You know, cut to Florida's underwater.
Right, exactly.
And, you know.
I've sprouted fins. Don't worry about this. It's fine. I'm a mermaid. Yeah, I mean, I always go a little bit further than that because I think it's so damn obvious now. I can't believe we're still 2018 having this... debate, shall we say. Again, one-sided, not unlike our rivalry, because I always adored you guys. But, yeah, I think what people, the big problem is they say, I can't make a difference, so I don't care. I'm going to toss this in here, because...
That's right. People always claim.
Everyone discounts that. And again, it's our planet. We're sharing it with the animals and the foliage. And I know people are thinking about Mars, but I'm pretty sure we just have the one planet. It's not a husband, all right? You can't just get rid of it.
And people are lazy. You say about dropping your thermostat. It's like I might drop the thermostat, but then my wife is cold, so it nudges back up. It's all in
the
moment.
Well, then you should spoon her, Fred.
I know, but I just...
I don't know how many times I have to come and give you guys counsel.
It's all in the moment for people. It's even like...
It is, but so easy. It's really not a hard thing to do.
I know.
You know who I find it interesting, and we've talked about this a lot, but I as a former smoker, I know I did this, but when I see it now, it seems so weird and old-fashioned to see somebody take a drag on a cigarette and then just throw it on the ground.
Why do they do that?
Flick it? To be cool?
No.
It doesn't qualify as litter, apparently.
That's it.
It's so crazy.
What does it qualify as?
No, I don't know.
And that's my point. For years...
It's tobacco rain.
For years, it's good for the environment. Trust me. For years, I did that. But now when I see it, again, it seems antiquated and old-fashioned.
Yes.
And then I saw it just a couple days ago. I was standing outside of a building, and a guy around our age threw his cigarette down. And I wanted to go, if that was a candy wrapper bar or, you know, some refuse, you
Disney
wouldn't throw...
Disney employees would... Well, remember in Anchorman? That's why it was so funny, because they would just ball up tons of garbage and throw it out the window just when they're walking.
Oh,
because
that
was the 70s. Just, just toss this.
The same person now that wouldn't drop a McDonald's bag on the street... because they're somewhat conscious, would take a cigarette butt and put it on the and step on it. Why?
But Amanda, you know,
it's just weird.
Are you old enough to remember when there was an? I remember this 70s or 80s when all of a sudden there was a campaign to pick up your litter, and I remember thinking,
yeah.
"It's not my job." Seriously, because we used to do that. We used to just throw.
I don't remember either, Amanda.
No. Did you really?
I mean, what is Howard speaking of?
Littering. Now, you two being—you're so young.
Millennials don't understand this. What are you talking about?
But you remember that. Do you remember when all of a sudden you'd see signs to pick up your litter?
Yeah.
And I remember when that was the beginnings
remember
of...
Remember when the talkies would play that in between
movies?
Yeah,
we remember when we used to go to the picture show and there'd be a guy with the piano.
Mm. Yeah, but you look at the litter around now, like off-ramps and all the roads, and you never used to see that when we were kids. Ontario was a pretty clean place. And now there just seems to be litter everywhere, especially along the roadside.
If we ran the planet, this is the one cue we can take from Disney, like a Disney employee, because I don't know if you've ever been to Disney World or Disneyland, and you happen to throw down a gum wrapper, like 16 ninjas descend, grab that wrapper, and then also take you somewhere bad.
It's like Singapore.
Yeah, on the Green Party thing, I was in Peterborough once, and there was some rally downtown, and it was the Green Party, and I was standing there, and there was this one girl, like, over the top, screaming at people about the environment.
That always works.
So I just got into a discussion with her, and she's a very nervous woman. She had a smoke, and it was just so ironic. She finished the smoke, she put it on the sidewalk and stepped on it. And I
all right, everybody, let's save the earth. Mother Earth.
And I called her.
Or she's going to be a bitch.
And I called her on it, and it was a very interesting...
You did call her on it?
Oh, yeah.
And what was her defense
on that? I said, Miss Green Party, you just did the... And then she said, oh, I was going to pick it up. I was going to pick that up.
What?
I was just talking to you. So I wasn't going to leave that there. I said, sure.
Okay. She said, I was going to pick it up and put it in a hummus that I've made.
I was going to make my own necklace. Yes.
Carla Collins is an award-winning comedian, actress, television host... and author of the best-selling comedic self-help book, Angels, Vampires, and Douchebags, which I think is hilarious, and you should pick it up wherever books are sold.
Do you know she was here the exact same time last year? Going through my notes this morning, it was Feb 9th, so it was like a day away, but exactly a year ago.
I'd like to visit Toronto in February.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, good call.
Here. Come in and get warm with Humble and Fred.
You know, the last time, I think either the last time or second last time you were here, we met downtown for lunch, and it was another, like, super brutal cold day. You remember us walking?
Well, I wasn't here. I didn't come onto the show, but yes.
We just hung out.
In November, it was insane.
Like, it was brutal.
And it was snot freezing. I had, like, tears running down my face, which I normally have when I'm about to see Howard, but this time...
Wasn't that the day of the who paid the bill controversy?
No, we're way past that.
I love that
because I've been paying for it ever since.
He has been
both spiritually and monetarily.
Sometimes it's swag though too.
Why don't you ask her again about her fee? Because I'm telling you.
No, I just...
Well, let's revisit that.
All you hosting people, I thought you love it when it's not a charity because you can just put it to them, I thought. Oh, okay.
What?
I'm not...
Wait, what is happening?
I don't know.
No.
I wish you were my agent.
Fred always has, like, one inappropriate question for me, and I sort of relish that.
This is Humble and Fred.
The Best of Humble and Fred continues with the great Carla Collins coming up in a sec. I'm Philip Hong. First, we have a couple of very important announcements.
Here's a note from an actual GigSky user. It says, my wife and I eloped to Ireland in June. And having the GigSky hotspot was invaluable. After our wedding, we flew to Amsterdam and then London. It fired up easily as soon as we landed in each country and was much needed as we had rented a car for our stay and needed directions from the airport to our hotel. And Jesse goes on to say basically just how incredibly convenient, how the data was used and able to check flights, hotels, listen to the radio, even watch some English Netflix while we were there. Not to mention Rudra Rishi Maharaj from GigSky was always available with any questions and had the customer service was excellent. An actual GigSky user. It ends simply, thanks, GigSky. If you haven't figured out by now that that's the way to go, well, I don't know what you're thinking about. Okay, stop thinking about what you're thinking about and get a GigSky hotspot. You can get, of course,
GigSky SIM. Check out our website, humbleandfredradio.com. Click on GigSky. Get it for free.
What he said.
Yeah.
This is Humble and Fred.
Carla Collins is an award-winning comedian, actress, television host. Let's talk to a couple of these.
Get carded.
Let's talk to a couple of these young millennials at our table, Fred. What else is going on with you two? Do you guys ever work together?
Never. I've never met Carla before. I love her.
We're girl crushes, but
one of my favorite Humble and Fred guests. I always
really
listen.
Oh, shucks.
I was in Sudbury last year, so I missed her, and I don't know where I was.
No.
When you were back in June.
No, but we haven't met. This is like a momentous occasion that we finally meet face to face. People thought we were the same person for a long time.
And you're wearing similar tops today.
We are, always. Yes. Mm-hmm. Boobs. I joke, but you know what?
Tarara boobs a day.
I am going to be filming a comedy special, my first one in the U.S., at the end of this month, and it's called The Millennial Whisperer.
That's
great. Is that what it's called? Really?
Yes.
Good for you.
They've decided on that name.
Carla's doing quite well in Los Angeles. I don't know if you're aware of that. Like, I don't know what her take at the door or any of those numbers you want to know, but...
Well, it depends whether it's a charity.
Ask me about my fee. I know. Our dog's being saved. Give me a lot of money then.
There's also another thing that Carla got. Something was filmed, and she and a couple of other women are... Is this the Netflix thing? Can you even talk about this?
Oh, no, the Queens of Comedy. Well, until, you know, they do something with that, this is the Millennial Whisperer is my own 1 hour.
Okay.
Yeah, so that I know for sure.
And what do you do that? You film it and then do what with it? Do you promote it to?
Well, we put it on YouTube. Okay. No, they sell it then to, you know, Showtime or Netflix.
Okay,
or
excellent.
Yeah, it's a couple of producers who have sold other shows, and they bring them around and say, who's interested?
Now, we've had this conversation with Canadian comics, and I don't know if I've ever asked you this, but, you know, and we have to watch ourselves because we could just do nothing but talk about what a doofus Donald Trump is, like, every day. But do you find, like, in Los Angeles, do comedians talk about it? Does anyone, or is it already hack? You know what I mean? Like, some guys won't do it because they think, okay, everyone's going to do it, but then it ends up like no one's doing it.
Well, most comedians I found never did it, just because I do find a lot of comedians don't do the current events or pop culture that I know Howard and I love to do. We get excited with
a radio
with a new bit, right?
It's a radio muscle that we all have.
We grew up in that.
Well, we've talked to many comics about that. It's just they have their set and they don't like to go outside it, and they've got to update it if it's current events, and
it's evergreen. Whereas I've got new stuff. I mean, Howard knows, like, I like to freeball out there.
Yeah.
And
Freebase.
But I do. Yeah, big drug user. I think there's a fatigue, I'll be honest with you. Now I just think the eye rolling, like, okay, you can go to Trump. It's to me, I think it's getting hack, unless you have a clever
I don't know. I just thought I'd bring it up.
On yesterday, I sat and I watched, on Howard's recommendation for some time, the Dave Chappelle from D.C.
Oh, yeah.
He does a whole thing.
Is 2 weeks old or so, like the really recent one?
Yeah, the most recent one.
But anyway, his whole take on Trump, it's just what you said. It's just clever and neat and different. Mm-hmm. It's not a bunch of, you know, what you're used to hearing. It's just very, very compelling. Isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I think Fred loved mine, and I think you played, which was very nice. Mobius Stripper, one of my two comedy albums right now that you can stream on Spotify, is I think if you do the rope-a-dope, and I remember making you laugh and being so excited where I said, let's address the elephant in the room, and there's an egomaniac running around right now in the U.S. with his beautiful foreign model wife, and he's a total cheater. He wasn't supposed to win, but screw it. I love Tom Brady. And people love that.
Yeah, that's a great joke.
So that way, nobody's, I think you have to try to be quirky. I was really hoping he would win the Super Bowl because I love him. He's like a hotter Chris Pratt, and that would keep that joke alive. But now I have to write again. Damn it.
Well, that's the thing.
You want to kiss him like his 11-year-old son did?
Yeah.
I'll get over it. People are always trying to find things about Brady.
We're not on it.
No, we defended that, Carla.
Now, not too close.
We defended that. How ridiculous
it
that
is!
Was.
Ridiculous. Yeah, it was. That's the biggest problem.
Well, and so strange because, you know, as fathers of daughters, he's got a son, but you know, why would it wouldn't have been anything if that had been your 11-year-old daughter. But people really need to move on from that.
Yeah, they really do.
Because then it's also, you don't want men to be affectionate with their sons.
It's ridiculous.
It is.
Well, it's a love-hate thing. If you like Tom Brady, it's okay. If
he's
you don't
polarizing.
Like him, he is.
It's why the joke works.
He's so good and been
He's a phenom. He's 40 and he's MVP.
That's right.
There's some things you can't deny.
He is polarizing when it comes to football. No doubt about it. So if you don't like the guy, that kiss was awful.
Did you happen to see? I don't remember the shot. It's either coming away from the Super Bowl or going, and how he was dressed.
No.
And there was a shot of what he was wearing, and someone said, it's either Tom Brady or a aging lesbian something. It was really, really funny. Mm-hmm. Is this because he had these big glasses? He looked very fashionable. Didn't look anything like a football player. But I didn't know that. I didn't realize he was such a polarizing figure in the sport.
Well, only because he's been so dominant.
Yeah,
because
he's won so often.
Everybody's tired of him.
Yeah. People hate a winner, and which is why we used to make fun of you.
Okay.
We hated it.
Like when I was a
winner. That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's a very good point.
Yes, and that's why.
And the unbridled sexual tension, mm-hmm. which
also
was obvious.
That.
Well, that hasn't gone away,
and it never will.
I can.
It never will.
Barely see beyond it. It's just like a cloud over the table.
I know. It's a little bit much. It's too much for us sometimes.
You think so?
All right. Well, Carla Collins wants you to know that she's here, and you should download things, and you should follow her.
Oh, no, but that's there's lovely. Also, you know, I believe there are still a few tickets if you would like to join us, and it's in Vaughan, and which is also beautiful this time of year.
Are you going to FaceTime? Are you going to FaceTime live it?
Maybe a little bit. Maybe Corey will.
Where in Vaughan is it?
It's the Primavera Banquet Hall.
Okay. Oh, the Primavera.
We know that one. So many weddings. I was going to say, if it's in Vaughan, it's...
Howard, I can tell you, Vaughan has great crowds.
Oh, my God.
Vaughan has... I find
they do. Why, you don't?
No, just sometimes at the Vaughan Yuck Yucks, it's a mixed bag.
I've never played the Vaughan Yuck Yucks. What's that like?
It's a mixed bag.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a mixed bag of references.
When are you starting to have a comedy show so I can come back?
Well, interesting.
And headline for you.
I'll have Fred negotiate the fee.
Let's do that. Okay, Fred, let's talk.
If it's
money,
for
ballers.
Believe me, if it's for us, it's a charity. You better give us a good
Yeah, you have no idea.
Well, I want to save my spirit animals in this case, so fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, I think we've had a great time.
I'm pretty sure we did too, but it's early, so I don't know. You know I love you guys. I love your listeners, so thanks for having me on.
All right, Carla Collins, everybody, Carla Collins.
This is Humble and Fred.
Coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred, we have a comedian who is also an improv artist extraordinaire. There's a great Monique Marion coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. We're continuing The Best of Humble and Fred on air and online. This is the Thanksgiving edition. I'm Philip Hong. Thank you very much for listening. We have the great improv artist now, Monique Marion, now on The Best of Humble and Fred.
Well, this is our guest, Monica. This is my daughter, Monica. This is my daughter, Spencer.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Check this out, Spen. Last year, Miss Marion filmed a web series and released a new character video every day of 2016. She wrote, starred, and produced, filmed, and edited 365 character videos.
Mm-hmm.
What was the inspiration? And at what point did you go, okay, well, this is...
It's January 1st. So the inspiration was, I've been doing solo work for a number of years, so solo comedy, and character work just came really naturally to me. So I was doing monthly shows at Comedy Bar where I was throwing together different character pieces every single month. I did that in 2014, and then in 2015 I did the Toronto Fringe where I had 12 different mom characters in my one-woman musical comedy called Mumsical, and that was within 60 minutes. And so basically I was like, well, this seems to kind of be my thing, and I've done dozens of characters so far in the past 2 years. Why don't I do this challenge? So I did it. I mulled it over for a number of months because I didn't really know if I could do this or I wanted to commit to it. And then, sure enough, I put together a trailer, and I was like, well, I put together a trailer on YouTube, it's official. And every day of 2016 was just pumping out a different character. I've got a Tupperware giant container full of wigs. I have like over 60 wigs.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But I'm curious, so like you're it's like a very ambitious project. A few weeks into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Sunday morning, you're a little, I don't know, maybe you're tired, you had a late night, and you're like, what character do I do today?
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm the tired, hungover person. Hi, everybody. How long were these pieces?
Every piece varied between 1 and 5 minutes. I'd say on average, each piece was about 2 minutes. Because I like to get into.
Did you repeat any characters? I
mean, Absolutely not.
Who's going to go back in July and go, wait a second, Monica, this is very similar to the hairbrush lady from February.
Did you ever cheat? Did you miss a day and then put two up the next day?
I did, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But only twice. Okay. Only twice throughout the entire year. One was because I was very sick. And then the second was I was literally stranded away from home. Like, I went on a camping trip. Vehicle broke down. Couldn't get back into the city.
Okay, so you're forgiven.
Yeah. But then I did make up for it, so it wasn't like I was always behind. I put two out the next day, so then I had to double my efforts.
And to what end? You did this because you thought it would be viewed and maybe create an opportunity?
Yes, I did it for multiple reasons. I did it to challenge myself as a comedian, as an artist, as a creator. Also, hopefully to gain some sort of potential work out of it. Perhaps.
What is that like when you challenge yourself? We really haven't challenged ourselves since 97, actually.
Speaking of work,
this last time.
Both of our mothers are dead, and you do mother characters. Maybe we could hire you to be our part-time moms or something.
I can do mom characters, yeah. Creepy.
Sure. His mom died, and then my mom died.
So really, what we're looking to see...
Hello, everybody. It's your dead mother
It's your dead mother, Fred and Howard. Yeah, see, you did this whole thing, and all we could think of is, could you be our mummy? Is there a chance you could be Mumsy? What character do you have to do today in this audition?
Me?
Yes, I'm looking at you.
Oh, I have to do a British girl.
A British girl.
She's playing Keira Knightley.
Playing like
today.
Keira Knightley.
Ah?
I'm playing, it's from the movie Bennett Like Beckham.
Oh, okay.
I'm playing Keira Knightley.
Wow.
I can see that, yeah.
What does she sound like? I know you guys, you and Charlie, my other daughter's name is Charlie.
But I'm not doing it like Keira Knightley.
No, do it. My other daughter, Monica, they have this funny thing that they do because we all love Notting Hill. No, what's the movie we like?
Love Actually.
Love Actually. Mm. And Charlie does an impression of Keira Knightley, but just her face. Is that what she does?
She like crinkles her nose and's like, what's the line?
Well, there's lots of lines.
They're all of me.
They're all of me.
I look quite pretty. Wow, well done you. But like, I'm not doing it.
She's all lower jaw like Keira Knightley.
Well done you. Like down there.
She always talks like she's just had a big glass of wine.
She's too posh for this, right?
She's more scrappy in this.
Yeah, so this one's more like, look, you know how I felt, Jess? Now you've ruined everything. Didn't think or just didn't care?
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Nice.
That's a cold read.
Dude, you sound like one of the kids. You know, what's the birthday? We have some friends, some family friends, whose daughters.
It's my birthday.
Is this how they say? It's my birthday.
It was my birthday. Okay, it was my birthday. But they're still even more posh. And I'm going funny. Like almost like Jamaican English for some reason. I don't know why it's happening, but it's happening.
I should go with it.
Yeah.
Monica,
I'm going grind.
Is there any counseling you could give to my? I know you came here to promote your business, but can you help my kid nail a gig so she doesn't have to go to the store at Yorkdale? And by the way, before we leave, are you still a vegan as of yesterday?
Yes,
it's unbelievable.
So 24 hours of veganism.
I don't know why you're having.
Yeah, and I fucked up twice.
Why am I having a problem with it?
Why do you have a problem with it?
Because by Friday she'll be only eating meat.
Hey, listen.
Listen.
When this project began of the 360, you don't think there's people who went, oh, really, you're doing a character every day? But it began, and that was the first day of the beginning.
That's it, sister.
Don't take that tone with me, buddy.
Yeah, nice callback.
Yeah.
Don't be logical.
Oh, really?
No, seriously. It began yesterday.
Every
so
day
what?
Last year, I kept saying, well, I'm not eating meat. Yeah, but how long is that going to last?
That's not true.
That is absolutely
I was one of
true.
Your... I was one of your... What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
I never said that to you.
Absolutely. Word for word.
Oh, it's not true.
All right. We've got a job for the interns. Go back and find it.
So, Monica, mm-hmm. I went on a... it's been a long time, but I went on about a year. I've been about 13 months eating no meat.
Okay.
And then a few months ago, I had some pork wontons. And as you know, bacon is a gateway meat. I've gone back to it.
Mm.
But my daughter says to me yesterday when I picked her up, she goes, oh, by the way, we're going to have lunch. She said, I'm a vegan now. Or as I call it, a vegan.
Vegan.
I know. I just say it to
her now. Yeah, that's a definite
Are you a
thing.
Vegan? She goes, Daddy, it's vegan. I don't care.
But she says to me yesterday, I'm a vegan now. I said, because I saw you on Sunday or Saturday, and you weren't then. You were mowing down on some chicken.
No, I haven't. I still don't eat that much meat.
Oh, okay.
I had salmon. I was a pescatarian at the time.
Okay. That was a few days ago. Well, that's what I was. You only
eat
fish.
That's what he was, yeah.
Pescatarian?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all I ever said to you was, I never embark on that stuff is because I don't have... I can't sustain it. That's all I ever said to you. I didn't question you.
But great, great point about Monika Marion, who you can get at Monika, that's M-O-N-I-Q-U-E-A, Marion.com. Mm-hmm. Great point, though, Spencer, about, or whoever made it. Was it you?
Spencer.
I can't remember. It was 5 minutes ago.
It was me.
So about when you started, you must have had people poo-poo and naysay.
I'm sure I did. I was fortunate and I didn't hear about it. But, you know, there's always skeptics, right? You put something online and social media is a hound for critics.
Sure.
But I fortunately didn't encounter that personally. But, yeah, I'm sure there were a lot of people that were like, oh, yeah, we'll see how this goes. And I did have people actually send me messages and say, you know, I've started other things. I can't believe you're still doing it. You know, I only lasted 30 days or something like that.
Let me just pause for a second. Okay, you got to go?
I do. Thank you so much for having me. It's been beautiful. Inspirational.
Yeah, all right.
I'll see you later.
You're one of our recurring guests.
It's been a while, though. I'm really excited to be back.
All right.
I'm sorry you have less sleep, and it's a direct cause of me.
Oh, it's okay. I literally could have gone to bed at any point. I chose to stay up doing manic push-ups until like 1 in the morning.
Go prepare your... there's fruit and vegetables and dirt up there for you to eat.
A Spencer visit without a song, too, seems so...
Save it.
Hollow.
She did accents.
She did accents.
This is Humble and Fred.
There's more with the great Monika Marion coming up, summing up this edition of The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong. We have lots coming up. First, a couple of very important messages, and they happen to be important because they're improv, too.
I also want to remind everyone that every day is a great day to go to FYI Music News, updated weekly, written for and about Canadians and Canada's music industry. FYIMusicNews.ca. Subscribe to the newsletter. It's a tightly written digest of key events and news of the day. Expanded features including a weekly career section and columns by musician and journalist Bill King. Check it out every day. FYIMusicNews.ca. Let's talk a little bit about the retirement Sherpa. There's a guy, and he's looking good these days.
Hey, Tim is a portfolio manager, and Raymond James is a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Listen, if you want to start a financial plan, he is the guy to get a hold of. He'll help you with it all, what age you should retire at, what income level you might want to have, can you reach that goal. You can talk about all the fun stuff you want to do once you're retired, can you afford it, where you need to get. He's got all the answers for someone who's already involved with a plan and you want a new guy or somebody who wants to start one up. He's the Retirement Sherpa. RetirementSherpa.ca is how you get a hold of him.
This is Humble and Fred.
Monika Marion, who you can get at Monika, that's M-O-N-I-Q-U-E-A, Marion.com. Mm-hmm. So back to people saying, you know, I can't believe you kept doing it. And it really is a testament to, the fact that you can come up with 365 characters. So it begs the question, do you have a favorite character, and will you do her, him, or it now?
Oh, my God. On the spot.
Damn it. Why didn't you send me this question?
Sorry, I apologize.
I thought you were a master improvisation.
I booked you at, like, midnight.
Yeah,
okay.
Do a mom, please.
So there's Pinterest Mom. Which is that's your mom, basically. That'd be or like my mom discovering Pinterest for the first time. It's a little more visual, but she's scrolling through and she's like looking for ham recipes. And so she's looking over her glasses and she's like, honey glazed bake ham. Donald, are you seeing there's honey glazed baked ham on here? Donald, there's Dr. Pepper ham. You can do Dr. Pepper ham. Donald, oh, look at these cute egg recipes. Deviled eggs. Donald, are you seeing this? And that's to her husband, Donald, who just does not give a
No.
Very good, very good.
Oh, thanks.
Author.
Thanks.
Author.
That was
author. Very nice.
So this ended on December 31st of 16?
Technically December 30th because it was a leap year this year.
All right.
I wasn't giving the public an extra one.
Hey. So what in the ensuing 6 months, has it done anything for you?
Not much.
No, you're here.
I'm here, yeah. No, not much. I've purposely also taken time off. It was intense, you know.
We never
every
do that.
Single day you're forcing yourself to create something.
Let me ask you something. Improviser, teacher, good citizen of this planet.
Well, we'll see.
Monica Marion. You know, Fred and I have been doing this show together for a very long time. But the show that we're doing now for the last 5.5 years, we've always been pretty good improvisationally together. We, you know, you would agree. You know, we've been, one of the things that's been sort of endearing about our show is that people listen to it and know that we're making stuff up as we're saying it. Mm-hmm. It's not very much, more rehearsed maybe on terrestrial radio. That's not the right term. Not rehearsed, but we would plan the breaks. When you only have 5 minutes to talk, you know, we might say, okay, listen, I'm going to backsell the song, and then I'm going to throw it to you for that story. Mm-hmm. But now, we literally, you know, both of us have some notes written down, but have not spoken to one another about what we're going to speak about since we started the show hours ago. My question, the reason I bring it up is, you know, you teach improv, and I know a lot of improvisers, Amanda, yourself, people also help out in the regular world or teach in the regular world. How does improv, I know it's the longest question ever, how does improv and it's sort of the learning of improv help regular people in their jobs? I know that Second City and you guys do a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a huge question. We could talk for hours.
It took a long time to get to.
But we could talk for hours about the philosophy of improv, but it can help in so many capacities. Just listening is huge. Being able to listen to the information that's being given to you. Being able to work together as a company, an organization, yesing each other, right? Building off of ideas. You know, how often have you, well, maybe not for you guys specifically, but within a company, you know, you're having a board meeting and somebody says, well, how about this idea? And then somebody's just like, that's a stupid idea. And then that's it. It's squashed. Nothing ever comes out of it, right? Mm-hmm. But if that person were to speak up and say, how about this idea in that voice, exactly like that.
Yes.
That's the...
I'd hope to be sitting next to that person.
How about this idea?
What is that, Jenkins? No, seriously, this could be mind-blowing.
And people will, you know, maybe it is a terrible idea, but to just springboard a little bit from it and say, okay, maybe, you know, how else can we make this grow, or how can we yes this and then potentially get somewhere even bigger and better? So
you guys do that. I know that you have some training that you do in the outside world, not just people taking Second City and improv training. Listen, we did it in radio. They brought us, who was that that did it? We took our whole staff to an improv training day.
At Second City.
At Second City, that's right.
You don't remember who the teacher was?
Nope.
Yes. Frank McAnulty.
Oh, my gosh.
Frank McAnulty. I went to high school with him, remember? And he was one of the instructors that day. I remember that.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Rest in peace, Frank. Rest in peace.
Yeah, oh, that's right. He died.
Linda Cash's. Is that Linda Cash's?
No. No, that was Paul.
No, he also died.
He also died. Okay.
I forgot Frank died. I went to high school with
this
him.
Topic, yeah. Improvisers that have died.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was doing.
Frank would laugh at that, for sure.
In Florida last week. Although what I was doing in Florida last week is a little bit different, but I do like the whole corporate improv for corporations.
And they sent us, and it was a great idea. We were doing Mojo Radio, and we went to the improv, and it was just one day, but it was pretty cool. And then when I was in Peterborough as a program director, I took that idea, and Paul and Linda Cash's school was next door, and I took the announcers in Peterborough there. We went for 6 or 7, and I could almost tell immediately on the air that they had a different attitude, looser, and thought forward all the time. It really is something.
You know, it's funny because my experience working in this particular forum with you, with Fred, because I did stand-up for a long time before I did radio, and then I've come back to doing stand-up, but because I've spent so much time just talking, that sometimes I have found now, especially in longer sets, that it's freed me up a little bit when to get away from material. And it's an interesting thing because, you know, I'll go out and I know I'm going to do certain bits or whatever. But when I'm doing my performance now, based on how much we do this, I'm a little bit more, I feel more secure in knowing that no matter what happens, I'll be able to talk around it. Because I don't, you know, sometimes I'll, you know, you screw up the bit or it doesn't come out right. Whereas before I'd panic, but now I'll go, hang on a second. That didn't come out anywhere near like it was supposed to. And I'll start again and
for
do
sure,
it.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of stand-ups do that. But I like it. It actually gives me a bit of a security blanket knowing that, I'll, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You still, I'll just around with it for a bit.
When you have actress nightmare, when you're an improviser, you just improvise your way out of the show. One of the things that came up a lot last week for the work I was doing last week is the use of the word but, actually. You know, where it's, you know, oh, you're really great, but. And one of the, if you've gone through a lot of these trainings, you'll hear it in people when they put the word and in, where you think it would be a but. And they use the word and. And I know there's that thing of like, well, really, they're saying the same thing. But it can, little tweaks like that can make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. You know, when we first started, Frederick and I, back in, I think it was 1900, we came across the country. Some of us didn't make it. But for some reason, you and I just caught on to that idea of not blocking one another very quickly. And then as we grew in the show, when people would come on, new people would start with us, we always sort of sat them down and said, listen, no matter what's happening, you know, your phrase was always, just go with it. You know, we might go on an absurd tangent and, you know, we would have, you know, the news person or travel person, and they would be reticent and it would just wreck it. And we used to say, you know what, no matter what we're talking about, I know it's absurd. Howard doesn't really think he's a train conductor.
And you know where that and you know where that comes from, and it's a big mistake. And again, I always reference Peterborough, but it's a battle I had up there with some of the announcers. They care more about their image than the show. And you know what? The show is the thing. It's the entertainment industry. And somebody might say something, and rather than go with it to create a show, it would be, oh, I'm going to shut that down because it's going to make me feel a bit embarrassed.
Right.
I don't teach it.
A lot of people do that.
I don't currently teach on an ongoing basis, but when I used to teach improv to kids for years and years, the thing that I'd always make them say before they go, other than I got your back, which is the other big thing, is serve the scene. Serve the scene.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, Monica, I'm sure you've had the experience, and it happens a lot. It happens in radio and TV and people that I, you know, we've associated with where they're so self-conscious about how they're going to appear in a discussion with us, you know, one in particular, she didn't last very long with us because it was literally stalling or stopping the discussion because you could tell that, you know, us and our little nonsense games, that was not her thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't serve the scene very well.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably, I don't know, for me, one of the things that people, the hardest hurdle to get over is it's not about you anymore. It's about all this.
Sure, you know? You've got a show to do. Yeah. You're doing a show. Because selfish improvisers, or not even selfish, just newer improvisers will come in. We always say you come into the scene. Don't go into the scene you want to go into the scene that needs you. Because if it's a really fun scene and it's got five people and it's going really well, that's the scene you're like, oh, I want to play. But the truth is it might not need you. You coming in might just make one more thing and f*** it up. But the scene that's like tanking, how do you serve it? How do you get it to good?
And to go one further is, I say, you got a neat story to tell in the air, but it doesn't have a great ending, make one up.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It really is okay. Because if it just leaves the listener with a smile or a chuckle, that's all that matters.
And then your dad is with you in Florida going, how much porn do you really watch?
No, exactly. But, you know, and that's funny. And again, he and I, within a few shows, early on, I'm talking about the first summer we worked together. You know, I just come from stand-up. Fred had been funny for his whole life. And we just kind of got wind of that notion that no matter what you said, I was going to go with it. And same with me. We would go off on these tangents. And again, all of a sudden, in the middle of a discussion of some radio thing, you know, we're pretending to be other people. And then the people around us be like, I don't know. We'll just pretend that I'm a train conductor for the next couple of minutes. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. And it's funny how much improv. And I grew up doing stand-up in Calgary. And my first few years was the only place to go on was at midnight at the Loose Moose Theater after the kids in the hall. And I sort of grew up in this idea of impro and Keith Johnston and that whole thing of, as you say, serving the scene and not being afraid to look ridiculous or play low status when you're a high status character. And that sort of served our show and has served our show well for 30 years because, you know, we may have some perceived status, but neither of us are afraid to look stupid.
Yeah.
Or to be the lower status character in a discussion.
And you know how you're in the zone is when you don't remember it. And that's you guys a lot. You're like, wait, did we already talk about it? Because you go, you're on a ride. You know, and with improv, most of the improv you do, you don't have no memory of it. Unless it's an audition, then you remember every moment of it. But beyond that, you're on that ride. You're in that zone, right? You're yes-anding, and you can't remember how you got there.
Can we go back to the auditions for a minute? Because that's also part of my world. And I encounter this all the time with actors that have never taken an improv course. And it's essential. You go in, and a lot of the times for commercials, you don't have to say anything. You just have to ad lib, pretend that you're doing something. And then you have these actors that go in and are like, what do you mean I have to make up a conversation? Like, pretend that I'm a train conductor. That's crazy. Whereas if they just took a couple of classes, loosened up, and were like, oh, this is how two people talk to each other and connect with each other. You know, it would feel a lot better. I'm sure it would look a lot better. Because, I mean, I've had, like, nightmare auditions just because somebody doesn't know how to improvise.
Well, Monica, it's time to get on the Humble and Fred train.
Whoa! Holy doodle! What's happening?
The other night, I was watching a local newscast. The sportscaster has been there for 25, 30 years. He was sitting at the desk, and he prides himself on being funny, very corny. But I could tell there was a teleprompter thing, a problem. Or he got to the desk late, and it was unbelievable the way you could just tell it overcame him. He wasn't quite sure what to say because it wasn't there in front of him on the screen. And I thought, all those years he's done that.
I know.
And early in my career, I could do a sportscast without even any copy because you learn to do that.
Yeah.
I think we've learned everything we need to know about this human. She seems very lovely. MonicaMarion.com.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for doing this at the last second. We appreciate it.
This is Humble and Fred.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Philip Hong, and happy Thanksgiving once again. This edition of The Best of Humble and Fred is brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, PayTM, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Strainprint. We broadcast to the world from the center of Canada's universe, nestled in the cozy bosom of the 5-Hour Energy Performance Zone. More Humble and Fred tomorrow and online at humbleandfredradio.com.